Today is Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. Haiti is falling further into chaos. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating if you haven't done it yet. What are you waiting for? That would help us out a lot. We'd appreciate it. You can email us as well, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. Joining me today to get through the news of the cray, Madison Seals and Trey Gones Phillips. And we have a lot to get to, as always. On the focus story, a bit of a positive one here, Madison, with some college students raising money for someone in need.
Yeah, you know that expression, kindness goes a long way?
Yeah.
Well, in this story, an act of kindness from college students is taking their school's security guard all the way to Nigeria. Such a sweet story.
Excellent. I, for one, am looking forward to some positivity with all of the chaos that's going on in the daily news cycle. So looking forward to the details on that. On the main thing, we've got a professor who was fired for being too religious. He's fighting back. That story from Billy will be on the main thing. Don't forget to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts. DC Debrief with John Stolness. That's every Friday, rounding up the happenings in DC. And then, of course, Newsmakers with Billy. A full-length interview each and every weekday. So make sure you go ahead and subscribe to those. You can do so in the description here on this podcast episode. And with that, our housekeeping is out of the way. So let's head on over here to the news in 90 seconds. Caribbean leaders called an emergency meeting yesterday with the United States, Canada, and France. This is an effort to stop the worsening gang violence in Haiti. Armed gangs have launched large-scale coordinated assaults against multiple government buildings and the presidential palace after attacking prisons last week and freeing close to 5,000 inmates. Street battles between the gangs and police have crippled their already fragile economy. The UN saying that half of the country's more than 11 million inhabitants don't have enough to eat, and 1.5 million are starving. Canadian citizen Richard Phillips could hear gunshots from his hotel and told media that the country just deteriorated really, really quickly. The real fear is that if police force collapses in Haiti, you become very vulnerable as a hostage, quite frankly. And the man behind it all is Haiti's most notorious gang leader and former police officer named Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier. And the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan began yesterday. However, it started without a ceasefire in place between Israel and Hamas. President Biden said he's worried about violence in Jerusalem without a ceasefire. And he sent a mixed message to Israel about a red line during an interview over the weekend on MSNBC. And Christian music artist Jeremy Camp revealed this weekend he's suffering from atrial fibrillation, known as AFib, and he had a surgery, went into surgery yesterday. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out those stories and more over at cbnnews.com. Of course, we'll give an update on Jeremy Camp when we have that, so I wanted to make sure I got that story in, even though I went over the buzzer on the 90 seconds, but we should be praying for Jeremy Camp, of course. And he's gone through a lot in his life. Of course, if you know his story with him, you know, losing the movie made about it and losing his first wife to cancer. And, of course, having a big music career in the Christian music industry. So prayers there. But, guys, I wanted to park here for a minute on this Haiti situation, because this is really, really crazy. And I got to tell you, I was there in 2017, and back then, it felt like the Wild West, and that was when it was relatively stable. And you'd go around, and it just felt like there were no police anywhere, and you know, you did see gang people sort of running around and intimidating and controlling. I witnessed that myself, and so it's only gotten worse and worse and worse since then. That's 7 years ago now, and obviously, we've had these assassinations, we've had these attacks on the prisons and everything else. And man, it's just, you even fathom what it's like to be in a country that's just completely collapsed. I mean, the government's essentially collapsed at this point.
No, I really can't. And, you know, we interviewed a guest on Faith Nation, CBN's Faith Nation, just in the last couple of weeks or so, who is a missionary in Haiti. And, you know, he's been there over the last couple of years during the time when there were kidnappings going on. And he's recently come back here to the U.S. just for the time being. But, I mean, one of the questions we ask is, when do you feel like it's going to be safe to go back, just because there is so much unknown and this has been going on for so long? And I mean, he just really doesn't know, but it's so difficult because it's also a time when the people there do need to hear the gospel. They do need relief, help, and efforts. And so, yeah, he's just kind of in this internal battle right now, just asking for wisdom and discernment from the Lord about when it's time to take that leap of faith to go back and help when it's so scary there right now.
Yeah, I think as Christians, we know, obviously, we have a clear obligation to be not just praying for people, but also to be providing for their physical needs when we have opportunity. And I know a lot of organizations that have done that over the years with Haiti, and because that opens the door to then having the more important spiritual conversations when we're meeting people's physical needs. But I think when you think about governmentally, how can we as the United States help Haiti? That one is a bit more, that's trickier than what we need to do as Christians, because who do we give, if we're to give resources, who do we give resources to? We can't give it to the government because the government is so corrupted. And then how do you know which resistance group to give money to? Because there's also often a lot of corruption within those groups as well. So I think the complexity here makes it really difficult to know exactly how as a nation we can be helpful to Haiti. But as Christians, we have a really clear obligation.
Yeah, for sure. And it is tough because no matter which side the U.S. would choose, then the people have sort of a disdain in a lot of ways for how the U.S. has intervened in different ways.
Yeah.
And trying to make their government better, but only ends up making it worse. You know, they extradited this beloved leader years ago and extradited him to Miami. Now, of course, this guy was, like you said, corrupt, but the people loved him. And this is what happens in these extreme poverty situations. People get desperate. They really do. And like you said, you know, bringing the gospel, there is a big Christian element there. And I saw a lot of that. And these people had great faith in the midst of adversity. But there's a lot of demonic stuff in Haiti. I mean, you drive down the road and you see voodoo temples and you see all kinds of weird stuff. And so the spiritual forces of wickedness, that's a very real battle in Haiti at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. It's also interesting when you are mentioning the leader that everybody in Haiti loved, but it's kind of like the same phenomenon happens with Vladimir Putin. You go and you poll Russians and they all will say that they love Vladimir Putin, but do they actually love him? It's the only leader they've ever known. He's a dictatorial communist, essentially authoritarian leader. So you can't really take any of that. You have to take it with a grain of salt, right? Or is this somebody they actually love, or is it just the only thing they've known? It's the evil that they know.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So definitely need to be praying there, because there's a lot of Christian missionaries that do a lot of work in Haiti, and a lot of them have their hands tied, they're there and they're in a very dangerous situation. So we certainly need to be praying and for God to make a way there, not only for stability, but then for them to start to thrive and not suffer this poverty and this extreme poverty and chaos that they've been subjected to for many, many years. So definitely our prayers there with the people of Haiti. All right, we're going to head over to a more positive story, as I mentioned at the top, and a group of college students in Rhode Island are raised money for a beloved security guard at their school. And tell me the details here.
Yeah, this story is about a group of college students who live in the dorms at Providence College in Rhode Island, and a security guard named James Mogaji, who works four night shifts per week in that dormitory. And James just started working at the school within the last year, but the students who live in the building he secures say that he always greets everybody, with a smile and welcomes conversations with everyone, no matter what time of the night you run into him. He just sounds like a really great guy.
And so I guess with that sort of attitude, what's the relationship been like between the students and the security guard?
Yeah, well, they see him as just another friend in the building, really. I mean, he's there to protect them and serve them. But all of the students said that they've built up just kind of a rapport with him when they see him. He's always checking in on them and they check in on him as well. And through that, they found out that he had not been able to visit his family in Nigeria in about 11 years. Mm. And he was clearly torn up about it. He missed them. He wanted to see them. So a freshman named Brandon Reichert started a fundraiser after he and a group of his friends learned about this and decided to raise money for a plane ticket so that James could visit his family over the summer. And they launched this GoFundMe on March 1st. And by early that week, they'd already received 216 donations for a total of over $6,000, which was almost double their original goal. So they decided to go ahead and give him the gift last Wednesday when he came in for his shift that night.
Wow, that's awesome. And so what was his reaction when he got the gift?
Well, this is by far the best part of the whole story because the students waited until James came in for his shift and then they excitedly rushed down to his desk to deliver his gift. And this is actually all recorded in a video that one of the students was taking. So you'll have to watch it for yourself. It's so good. It's on TikTok. Someone named Leah Quinn posted it. But one of the students, when they got down to his office, gave this emotional speech to James about how he makes their school experience better and safer and how they take care of each other as family. And that's when they handed him the card and told him that their gift to him is a trip to Nigeria. And James was obviously overcome with emotion. He covered his face. He dropped to his knees while the students clapped and cheered for him. And he stayed speechless for quite a while. But after he regained some composure, James said he doesn't know how much he can thank them, but he prays from the bottom of his heart that God would continue to protect them and help them achieve their goals. So he's clearly a man of faith as well and just clearly has such a huge heart for these students.
Yeah, that's really great. And we'll add the link to that video in the description of this podcast so you can just quick look down there and check it out, not have to go searching around for it. But again, that's just a fantastic positive story in the midst of all this. And look, this is the sort of thing that's really the solution to a lot of what we face. There's so much division. There's so much pettiness. And I guarantee you all the kids on that dorm and that school have all kinds of different views, and this guy has probably a whole bunch of different views of his own and that maybe don't align or align with these, and it doesn't matter because they're just being human to one another. And man, we would just solve so much if we could just get back to that at least a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and yeah. People were clearly just so ready to jump on the train and donate. Some of them probably didn't even know who he was. This is a security guard and just one of the many dormitories. But I just checked in with the GoFundMe today, and even after he was already given this gift, I mean, plane tickets are not thousands and thousands of dollars, so he clearly had enough to make this trip, but the total is still climbing and currently at almost $25,000, which is wild. So the students are hoping he can get a few trips out of this.
Yeah, that is really cool. I think it's at the end of the day about remembering that other people around us are image bearers, right? They're just like us. They're created in the image of God and they have value, and you know, meeting their needs and surprising them with things like this and just really caring for people's emotional and spiritual and physical needs. At the end of the day, that's what we're here for as Christians, right? Because it's providing for those things that open the doorway to having conversations about the gospel, which is our number one priority, or should be our number one priority as Christians.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And look at what social media generally does to us for the most part. It really pits us against each other. People are just ready to label others and dismiss others and put them in a box because they follow X, Y, and Z. And it's really divided us so much that these are the sorts of things you can, that's why they're like news stories now. It's like, wow, look at this, because it's like getting back to the humanity that we should all have in how we treat one another, and we've lost it. I mean, if we're being quite frank, I would say as a whole, as a culture, we've lost it. And a lot of that's because we're staring at our phones and feeding the echo chamber and feeding the confirmation bias that we all have. And it I think really does increase our bitterness and angst towards one another. And so just doing something simple like this, I bet you that's why, Madison, so many people are jumping in that maybe don't even know, because they're just like, you know what? Here's somebody nice who's making the world a little bit better just by his basic interactions. And so, yes, I'm going to help this person. And that's why we don't even care when somebody's going to get way more than their plane ticket is worth, because it's like, great, I'm happy to do something nice for someone and make somebody else's life have a incredible moment that they'll be able to talk about for the rest of their lives. And so will other people. And that's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives people a chance to serve others instead of, like you were saying, so many things on social media that turn us inward and cause us to focus on ourselves and treat ourselves. It's a blessing to be able to bless somebody else and treat someone else.
Yeah, 100%. All right. Well, Madison, I appreciate you bringing some positivity to the podcast today. That's a great story. And we're going to move now over to the main thing, and a Texas college professor, Dr. Johnson Varkey, who said he was fired after university leaders reportedly found his teachings too religious. Well, he's been reinstated to his position more than a year after being terminated. He and his First Liberty attorney, Kayla Toney, joined Billy Hallowell for today's main thing.
Dr. Varkey, you just scored a major victory. You'll be returning to your classroom by the fall, which I'm sure is very exciting for you. But before we get into that victory, let's talk a little bit about the backstory. You ended up losing your position teaching at a college. What happened? Why were you removed from the classroom?
This happened, I received a letter from the vice president of academic affairs early 2023. It was in January that they are doing an ethic violation investigation on me. And I asked him what was the reason and what were the complaints. He wouldn't give me an answer. But 2 weeks later, I received a termination letter. And that letter doesn't explain the whole reasons behind my termination. So I assumed from his wordings that I was doing religious preaching, and I mentioned something against the homosexuals and all those. So I assumed that it would be something related to my teaching on reproductive system, which was towards the end of that semester, and where four students walked out of my classroom. So I assume maybe that was a reason. I never received any copy of any complaints at that time. I didn't receive any explanation. So that's what triggered all these case and my response to that case. And I approached First Liberty to defend me, and all those things happened after that.
So you were trying to get an answer from them in the beginning of, okay, what is the reason for this? You know, I assume you enjoyed your job teaching.
Yeah.
You know, you had given your perspective on something in the classroom there, and students didn't like it, a few walked out. But you were left to assume because they weren't being clear, correct, on what it was that led to this.
That is correct. And I was left to assume that, and I received the actual complaint only in July or August, which is almost 6 months later, 6-7 months later than terminating me.
And what did that official complaint end up saying? Did you get, you know, very specific information in there?
Yeah, it was the same as my termination letter, that I was doing some religious preaching, which I never did in the classroom, and also I made comments against the homosexuals and some anti-abortion rhetoric and jokes about women. All those were the complaints, but it never happened in my classroom.
You know, it is interesting, because I will tell you, and I think most people who have gone through the college system know this, on the other side, you know, there are plenty of things that are said in classrooms all the time, right, that are very political sometimes. And nobody seems to ever really do anything or say anything about that. I can think of my own experience seeing things repeatedly that are sort of etched into my memory. Anyway, so Kayla, let me ask you this, because it is interesting. You know, this case is very intriguing. When you first heard about the case, and I want to get into the victory because that's why we're here today to talk about that. But when you first heard about it, what was most concerning to you in light of the details we just heard there?
There were a lot of concerns. We were outraged, and in fact, that Dr. Varkey's speech had been targeted in this way. There were many First Amendment violations that we saw right away. First, his religious exercise. He is a committed Christian. He's also a pastor, in addition to his role as a biology professor. So we think there was some religious targeting by students who knew he was a pastor and thought they could accuse him of something like religious preaching, even though, again, he was simply teaching straight from the textbook and following those lesson plans that he had used for 19 years. And then there's definitely an academic freedom concern here as well, because professors need to be free to teach from the textbook and also to explain things that students may not agree with, may not have encountered before. That's part of the purpose of education, is that it's supposed to broaden student horizons and expose them to different viewpoints that they may not necessarily agree with. And so those were all concerns. And then we also saw some due process concerns that Dr. Varkey never had the opportunity to meet with the students who were upset or learn what their complaints were or have a conversation even with his supervisor, which was part of the college's own procedures for a complaint or a termination. So really a lot of concerns. And we've just been so honored to represent Dr. Varkey. He's a wonderful man of God, a wonderful client, and a wonderful biologist, frankly. And we're just so glad that he's going to be back in the classroom soon.
Well, you know, and one more thing, Kayla, on this, because First Liberty filed a religious discrimination charge with the EEOC. Can you explain what role that played, and maybe even explain a little bit about what a religious discrimination filing looks like for those who don't know?
Yes, absolutely. The EEOC stands for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and this is a federal agency whose job is to protect the rights of all Americans in the workplace. So if any employee experiences discrimination on the basis of a protected class, such as religion, sex, race, national origin, et cetera, they can bring a charge with this agency. And the agency then takes about 6 months to investigate or look into the matter themselves. And then most commonly, they will issue a right to sue letter to the employee who made the charge. And then once we have that letter, we're able to file a lawsuit in federal court. And so the timing is interesting here, because we were right about at the point where we would be receiving that notice of right to sue letter. And that's when we heard that Dr. Varkey was going to be reinstated.
Now, is it possible, will you still get a letter from the EEOC potentially on this? Is that still outstanding?
Potentially, but we will be, assuming Dr. Varkey does go back to the classroom as planned, we will be dismissing the EEOC charge as part of the settlement.
Okay. It would be interesting to hear what they say, you know, on this, even though you've already come to a settlement here. So Dr. Varkey, you know, finding out that you were able to come to a settlement and agreement on this that would put you back in the classroom, what did that feel like when you heard that?
Oh, yeah, I was so excited, and I thank the Lord for that outcome, and I am grateful to First Liberty, Kayla, and also to the Lord to put me back in classroom. Yes, I am excited to go back and teach. That I love to do.
Yeah. Have you had, can I ask, have you had support at all from students and faculty in these situations? You hear, obviously there were some who were apparently disgruntled or upset, or, you know, but did you receive support at all? Have you been able to communicate with anybody from the college community as this has been going on now for quite some time?
Yeah, of course. I contacted some of my colleagues, and they were very supportive. And of course, I did not contact any students because I didn't feel contacting any students, because it was, the case was in the hands of First Liberty, and First Liberty was dealing with it, so I didn't want to contact anyone. But of course, yeah, I saw some support from my colleagues. Yes, I did.
All right, Billy, thanks so much for that interview there. Really, really appreciate it. That's going to leave us with time on the podcast for one last thing.
Well, in light of the story we were talking about earlier on Haiti, I thought Psalm 34:18 was a fitting verse. It says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit."
Yeah, it's such an encouragement to know that the one who created us and knows our hearts better than anybody else is the one who's also close to us and able to comfort us.
Yeah. And trusting in God's plan, and that he knows that we can't see the forest through the trees, right? We can't see the whole picture clearly, but he does. And we can trust in that, even in the midst of grief and pain and sorrow and tough times like they're experiencing in Haiti, as Trey said. So good spot to leave it. A lot of prayer points for us today. And make sure as well you get over to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com to keep up on all the news from a Christian perspective. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise, we shall return tomorrow. God bless. See you then.